We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Clint Sterner, joined by Wade Smith. We got the 5 o'clock fire for you, baby. Astros owner Jim Crane fires manager. Fire. Thank you, Mr. President. Fires. That is the president, isn't it? That is the president doing that, isn't it? Good. I'm glad that's pretty sharp, baby. Did you know that was the president?
Of course.
Okay. Well, I
mean, he's got a distinct voice.
That was quick, though.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to Sports Radio 610, you know, all day, you'll hear those different lines, especially coming from B-Man.
Yeah. Astros owner. Yeah, there's some bad hombres over there. The Astros owner, Jim Crane, fires manager A.J. Hinch and GM Jeff Luno. Wade, it happened quick, swift action. When it's all said and done, the good about the Astros organization right now is, and some people will disagree with it, I think people around the league will disagree with it, is the simple fact that the ownership is still in place. So the guy that's signing the checks, he's A-OK. He's sitting up there top. He's trying to find a GM. He's trying to find a head coach. And the players, no players have been penalized for their part in the sign-stealing scandal that went on in 2017 and went on into 2018. So, Houston, rest assured that while it's not a good thing, this is a bad, bad day, a bad week, a bad month for the Houston Astros. But when it's all said and done, I think this is something that the way it all came down, the way that the penalties came down, the way that the firings came down, the Astros should be able to survive this thing at least for the next couple of years. And you're looking at a roster, you're looking at a lineup and a roster and a rotation that's still a 90-95 win baseball team.
Yeah, any way you slice it, the way that Jim Crane came out with the decision quickly, did not mess around with it, you know, all right, you could disagree with the decision or you can agree with the decision, but whatever the case may be, you know that he has a direction of where he wants to go. He's going to have to figure out somebody to replace two guys that were integral in the building of this organization. But all the players that you have in fold are still going to be here. You're not going to lose any of those guys. And so he's going to have to figure out a couple of people to replace those two guys. But at the end of the day, players win games, especially in baseball. And so if you have the Altuves and hopefully the Springers, and you have Correa and you have Bregman, those guys on the roster, you still have Verlander, all those guys, you're going to win a bunch of ball games. But it's going to affect the Astros going forward. Now, how much, that's the question.
Yeah, when you look across the landscape of professional sports in Houston right now, 2025 could be a hell of a year for the franchises, all three of the major ones. And it could be a problem, bro.
And I mean, 2025, and what's your reason behind that?
I mean,
that
2025, you mean, look at the Texans traded away all their draft picks. And I mean, maybe it's soon. Hopefully it's not sooner. I'm just thinking it's 2020, give them 5 years. Maybe it's 2023. But down the road in a couple of years, you could, if all the, and I don't know that I'm bought in, Wade, to the importance of draft picks. Now, the Astros lost draft. They just handed them away. I mean, they're done. They can't – you might as well wad them up and throw them in the garbage. You got nothing in return for them. But when you're talking about the Texans, they got value for their draft picks. And so I don't know that I'm that shook up about the trades that consisted of draft picks and the fact that the Texans don't have many first-round draft picks or they gave away a couple moving forward. I don't know that I'm sold that that's such a huge ordeal. I still need to do a little bit of digging in that. It clearly is not a big positive as you talk about, you know, improving the youth on your football team and having young talent, young cheap talent. But I don't know that I'm convinced that it's just it's going to just be such a major problem in the future. But when it's all said and done, your baseball team, your basketball team, and your football team now they're significantly handcuffed from a draft standpoint in the near future.
Yeah, you're going to have a tough time figuring out a way to making your rosters younger through the conventional way of the draft, because the Texans traded away a significant amount of their higher draft picks, two first-rounders and a second for Tunsil and Steels. But the thing about that is both of those guys came in and played at a very, very high level.
Yes.
So if you have, if you're actually getting something for those draft picks that you lost. Now, on the converse of that is the Astros are giving up a first and a second round pick over the next 2 years, and there's nothing you're getting in return for that. You're losing those guys, and you're losing the ability to supplement a team that is starting to have a bunch of players go into their prime or start to get past their prime. The more guys are getting paid dollars and cents, you got to supplement that with cheap labor. And so that are guys that you think are going to project to be on the roster for a long time. And so when you get rid of a first and a second round pick for 2 years in a row, that is significant.
Yeah, and look, I think if I remember correctly, that the Rockets gave up a pretty good haul from a draft standpoint for Westbrook in the trade for Westbrook, didn't they?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't even remember the last time the Rockets had a first-round draft pick. It seemed like every time I look up, right, Daryl Morey is going to trade away first-round draft because he's moving, because he's trying to get players. Because the Rockets have been in a win-now mode over the past 5-6 years. Yeah. I can't remember the last time they had a first-round pick. And so I don't know when their next first-round pick is, but hopefully it's in the near future.
So it looks like the Rockets gave up two firsts and the rights to swap two others in the deal.
So there you have
it. But with the combining with some other trades, they don't have any first-round picks for, I believe, the next 4 seasons.
Look, the draft
25. There you go.
Yeah, the draft parties are going to be few and far between in Houston. When you're talking about the Rockets and the Astros, and
you have to have day two parties, baby, for the NFL.
Yeah, we'll be ready to rock and roll on day two. So, nonetheless, I mean, I think the message at this point. I mean, look, we've read the report. We know Major League Baseball handed out all their penalties, all their disciplines. Jim Crane one-upped him and fired the head manager and the GM, and now we're left to pick up the pieces of what does it mean. And I think ultimately for the city of Houston, the fan base, the Astros are going to be okay. You're still going to have the same lineup. You're going to still have the same pitching staff that you were going to have coming into 2020 anyway. So the tickets, it's still going to be a lot of fun. And prices are still going to be high, and it's going to be a fun baseball team to watch for the next couple of years at the very least. Wade, when you look at the other thing that went down last night, man, is there's nothing more beautiful to me than college football. I absolutely love college football, especially when you get to the college football playoffs or back in the day, the BCS games. I don't care how you get to it. That's not this conversation. But when you match up the best versus the best,
yeah,
at that level, man, it's pure. And LSU put on a show last night, beating Clemson 42-25.
Hey, man, Joe Burrow is the truth, man.
Come on.
He is the real deal. And he was going against another guy in Trevor Lawrence who was widely thought of as the number one pick in any this year or next year. And so because he's of his age, he's going to have to come out next season. But after that performance last night, Joe Burrow, to me, he's going to be the best player. He's going to be the best quarterback in the AFC North by 2022.
Hey, wait, don't go there yet, man. I ain't got enough time on the clock to have that conversation. We're going to hit that. We're going to hit the Joe Burrow. I'm going to dig into Joe Burrow now because I got a confession. But let's say that for a second. Right now, the season, Wade, that the LSU Tigers had, they wrapped up last night. And I believe Kirk Herbstreit said this. Kirk Herbstreit said that he believed that Joe Burrow had to win last night for everything to put a nice bow on this season,
yeah,
and for this to be considered the greatest single season by a team in modern era college football history. And I don't know that I can argue with him on that point.
Yeah, 15-0, you beat 7 top 10 teams. The last 4 games, you beat Georgia, you beat Alabama, you beat Oklahoma, and you beat Clemson.
Yeah.
Hey, you beat all the best, and you beat them all handily. It wasn't like they were squeaking by and getting these W's. They were head and shoulders the best team in college football against a bunch of really good teams, against good quarterbacks, guys that were Heisman finalists, guys that were legitimate. There will be Pro Bowl. Will be NFL players,
yes,
coming up
no
in the
doubt.
Future, and so. You got to salute him and say that to me, it was the best season I've seen out of a college team since I've been alive, since I've been watching college sports. And I've seen some good ones. I've seen the Miami Hurricanes. I've seen, yep, Nebraska Cornhuskers. But this was the most impressive season I've seen out of a college football team.
Wait, look, when you look at this thing, man, and you mentioned some of it, 7 victories versus top 10 teams this season, that's most in FBS history. All right. And You start looking at the members of this football team, the only team in FBS history to have this combination, 5,000-yard passer Joe Burrow, 1,000-yard rusher Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and two, not one, but two 1,500-yard receivers, Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, who both showed up and showed out last night. And, oh, by the way, there's a guy named Terrence Marshall who caught one, maybe even two, and two touchdowns last night. He's pretty damn good, too. And Randy Moss's son.
Yeah, Shad Moss. Listen, yeah, they got bad. A lot of weapons there.
Come on.
And Joe Burrow figures out a way to get them all the ball. And he does it in a manner that he never seems rattled. He's one of those guys that's going to scramble, get out of the pocket, and keep his eyes downfield, find guys. He puts the ball in places to where only his receiver can go up and make the play, and those receivers go up and make those plays. It's a beautiful thing to watch the LSU offense go out there and just execute. They do it at a high level. They do it at a high tempo. And they put teams on their heels. They're very, very aggressive the way they attack teams, and it's refreshing to watch.
And Wade, you just spotted something I believe on social media over there that has to do with the LSU coaching staff.
Oh yeah, Joe Brady is now the offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. Matt Rhule building his staff.
Hey,
let me go get me Joe Brady.
Matt Rhule. That is arguably the hottest head coach in the business.
Yeah,
at that point in time when Matt Rhule went to Carolina, and there's no doubt about it, the hottest coach in the business at any level was Joe Brady after last night, and Carolina goes and gets both of them.
After last night and after this season in general, man, think about LSU's offense a year ago and think about it, what you've seen this entire 15-0 run and the dominant performance after dominant performance that they put out there. Now you got Joe Brady leaving the college ranks, going back to the NFL. He's with Matt Rhule. I'm looking forward to some good things out of the Carolina Panthers,
It's going to be fun to watch that transition for sure. Wade, man, watching that game that we just got through talking about last night, I'm going to revisit something, man. I'm going to eat some boudin tonight. I love some good boudin there, Coach. I'm with you, baby. But watching that game last night, man, I'm just furious to watch college football teams execute things offensively that the Texans should be executing. And I was furious last night, and I want to pinpoint a few of those things and chop them up with you next right here on Sports Radio 610. Joined by Wade Smith, former Houston Texan offensive lineman, 12-year NFL vet. Wade, I'm sitting there watching that game last night, man.
Yeah.
What a game. Great game. I'm dialed in, locked in. I had a cousin of mine who, man, he's in there, toes up in the biscuit, man, and got the volume turned down and didn't keep his old lady up. I said, man, it's a national championship game, baby. Get up and go outside and watch that damn game. What's wrong with you?
Happy wife, happy life.
Come
baby.
On. Yeah, look. Yeah, well.
You'll figure it out real soon. Man, you know what I mean? You'll figure it out.
We'll see. We'll see how things end up working
Stay
out.
Stay tuned.
But wait, I'm sitting there watching this game, man, and I can't help but literally be, I mean, I'm just furious watching two offensive college football offenses do things very, very, very well that the Texans don't even attempt to do, or if they do attempt to do it, they don't attempt to improve it and use it often enough to be a real factor. You know what I mean? Like to be a real part of the offense. And it's such elementary. People always, I feel like people on the text line or people that call in, and it's like, I hear, oh, man, why y'all always talking about the negative and why this, why that? Man, because it's so damn simple. You know what I mean? I understand there's a lot of teams that struggle out there, but the reason I'm harping on something is because it's so simple. It's so simple to the point of, I watched that game last night, Wade, and not one offense, but both offenses used tempo multiple times to create an advantage.
Yeah.
To create an advantage, a real advantage, force the opponent to waste timeouts. Force the opponent to stay in a defense they don't want to stay in. Use tempo to mash on them. Step on their neck when you got them down. And it's so furious. It makes me so mad to watch a team in 2020 that a large number of players, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, were raised up playing 7-on-7. They were raised up in a power spread. They were raised up using tempo to their advantage. So when I'm harping on something, Wade, I'm just going, the reason I'm harping on it is because I cannot understand how it's not a bigger part of the offense.
Here with the Houston Texans.
Yes.
And that's the issue when you have a guy that came from that particular scheme you mentioned, a power spread that utilized tempo to his advantage to win a national championship, to go to another one, and it's not getting utilized anywhere near to the extent that it was when he was at the university, at Clemson University.
Yes.
And it doesn't make sense to me why that is not being implemented here with the Houston Texans. It's something that is his strength. It's something that now it's also a strength of your offense if you utilize it, because now you're dictating to what your opponent has to do or not do. It limits their ability to substitute. It limits their ability to rotate in guys in and out of the lineup. And it's something that could have been used in Kansas City against that defense. It could have been used against Buffalo in these playoff games. And it was just frustrating to watch it not be utilized, especially when the Texans got down.
Yeah.
Especially when the Texans were down 34-24 or 41-24.
At that point, it's common sense.
And it still wasn't going on,
right,
though. It still
right.
was not being right. utilized. And it's you're trying to figure out what's the reason why, what's the reasoning behind it. I'm a type of person, man, I deal in reason and logic. And so if you explain something to me I can agree with you or disagree with you,
right,
but
if there's reason
to it and there's logic to it, I can be all right, I see where you're going with that. But you're not going to get any explanations from there.
Yeah.
But just thinking about it and thinking and using reason, like, it doesn't make sense to me why it's not something that's utilized more with the Texans offense.
Wait, look, the thing that we know is that we've seen, I've watched closely 2 years of football,
yeah,
and it don't exist. I mean, that's why I'm so passionate and so committed to the fact that I don't care what you do with the head coach. I really don't. The GM, I mean, he's done a good job. I don't care about all that. But the play caller's got to change, man. The play caller's got to change. It can't be a run it back. It can't be a run it back situation with the same old, same old. And the lack of using tempo, that's not one of those like, well, gosh, dang it, man, you know, that's just not part of our offense. No, that should be part of every single offense. It was part of every offense that I ran in 1997, bro.
Yeah, I tell you what, not one personnel change needs to be made. It's just a philosophy needs to be made, a change in a philosophy. That's what needs to happen. There needs to be a change in the offensive philosophy when we say, you know what, we're going to dictate to teams week in and week out. We're going to have a certain identity. That's going to be us. And so if it takes a person to be changed in order to make that happen, fine. If it takes just an internal thought process, you know what, I'm going to change up my method of operation, that's fine too. But if you utilize that thought process, I'm going to be aggressive, I'm going to utilize tempo, I'm going to play to Deshaun Watson's strengths, then the team is going to benefit. And however you make that happen, I'm good with, because there's so much talent on this roster, especially offensively, that there's no reason that you play a team like Kansas City, whose defense is okay at best, for you to only put up 31 points. And not all of those 31 points were straight up offense. You got a block punt. You know what I mean?
You got a drop punt.
You got a muff punt. That's the reason why you got two of those scores, because you put you right in the red zone, I think, the 5 or 6 yard line. So you're telling me you had two legitimate drives,
and
that
one
you
was
went
the very
down
first
skip,
one of the game.
The first one, and it was a beautiful drive.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you watch that drive, listen, everything about that whole first drive was perfect. You're talking about the idea that Bill O'Brien won the coin toss and said, give us the ball. Beautiful. The idea that he set up the eventual touchdown to Kenny Stills with the first play of the game, a little screen pass to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep.
Beautiful. My thing is, keep that same energy throughout an entire ball game.
Yep.
Let's not be inconsistent with it. Let's keep being creative and using tempo and things of that nature to situate what you got. And use Duke Johnson.
Yeah.
Use Duke Johnson.
Yeah.
Use Duke Johnson.
He's a weapon.
He's a weapon, and we didn't use him.
There's no doubt, man. Look, the other thing I saw last night, and Kirk Herbstreit highlighted this, was Clemson getting Trevor Lawrence on the edge with creative routes. In other words, catching a snap, boom, he's sprinting right. in some kind of creative route. We used to call it a flood concept. I believe they call it layers now, to where you have receivers at different depths, and he's throwing dimes out there on the run. Just getting him on the edge and couple it with creative route concept. It's just one of those deals, again, where I'm watching football, I'm just like, man, I would love to see that from the Texans. I mean, getting a quarterback on the edge like that would help the offensive line. It helps a mobile quarterback get outside, and his lines of sight, his vision is improved. The angle of the throw is changed. It's just a component that this team, this offense should consist of heavily.
No question about it. Anytime that you move the pocket, now when you come back and do a drop back pass, that affects the defensive line. No doubt. Because if you consistently move the target that they're going to face, they're not going to be able to get a bead on Deshaun Watson and where he's going to be. Right. That's going to cause them to hesitate. That's going to cause them to slow down, stop their feet. And if you do that, now you give an edge to your offensive line, give yourself more time for routes to develop, and you're going to have more guys running open down the field. You just don't see it. And Deshaun Watson is too athletic and too good throwing on the run for you not to see the Texans utilize moving the pocket on a more consistent basis. It just logically doesn't make sense.
Wait, I got one more for you, man.
What's that?
The way that LSU figured – Clemson started out with a great plan defensively. I mean, Joe. It's obvious if you watch the game, Joe Burrow and Coach Orgeron – both alluded to it in their post-game comments. LSU figured it out. The way that LSU saw that the plan that Clemson had, and in about two series, both series they were backed up inside the 5-yard line, inside the 10-yard line, the way that they figured it out was impressive. And the reason that this is relevant to me and the Texans is that I think one thing that is a legitimate issue. I've seen it. You've seen it. We had
Dan Orlovsky.
We had Dan Orlovsky on, and he alluded to it in the 15 minutes that we had with him. The fact that the Texans can't handle pressure and don't have answers and ways to protect the quarterback is scary. It's hard to understand how a professional offense doesn't have answers. And the way that I sat there last night and watched LSU figure out what Clemson was doing, bro, it was beautiful. It was blatantly obvious what was going on. You know how college offenses look to the sideline all the time for the coaches?
Yeah.
You know the play? They were looking to the sideline to get what was happening in the box. How was Clemson going to attack the quarterback so that they could direct their protection the right way, pick up the blitz or pick up the pressure and give
Joe Burrow
a chance to throw the football down the field. I mean, wait, it was the quarterback get up there, boom, he'd give some kind of dummy signal. The defense would move. He would look to the sideline, which Joe Brady would be in the box. He would talk to the sideline, tell him what to do. They would redirect the protection, bang, and the next thing you know, you got touchdowns. You got fireworks going off. You got 42 points and a big-time victory. It was just beautiful to watch, so I greatly appreciate it. But, again, on the backside of it, I was like, how come it's so hard on Sundays for the Houston Texans to do something even similar?
Listen, teams that win ball games are teams that are able to adjust on the fly. That's what you saw out of LSU. They were able to adjust on the fly. In-game adjustments, that's the difference between winning and losing ball games. I don't care what level you're playing at. And so that's something that – you've seen out of the Texans at times. You've seen at times that they come out slow and then they figure things out and all of a sudden it's a juggernaut and they get rolling downhill and it's an avalanche and they put up a bunch of points later in ball games. This game against the Chiefs was the exact opposite. They started so strong and they were once the Kansas City Chiefs adjusted to a few things, they weren't able to readjust and continue to consistently move the ball. And so That was one of the differences in the game. Of course, I'm sure we'll talk about the defense, but offensively, if you put together some long drives that keeps the Kansas City Chiefs off the field and they're not able to put up 51 points in three quarters.
Yeah, look, there's several different things that we can – well, I wish we had a 10-hour show. I don't know if my voice would last, but we could chop up all the things that are wrong and what's going on over there. Wade, I told you, man, earlier we're going to dedicate some time this next segment to talk about Joe Burrow. I mean, this guy's lit the college football landscape on fire in one season. He came out of nowhere damn near. And dang it, we're going to talk a little college ball and the best quarterback in the game next right here on Sports Radio 610. and Wade Smith, my man, former Houston Texans offensive lineman. Hey, look, man, that damn AB, that damn Antonio Brown, man. I can't keep up. It used to piss me off, and now I'm just laughing. He done got another video come out. He cussing the police again or something. He has lost his damn mind.
Yeah, man, baby mama drama, and he cussing out the police because the police came over to his house to take his kids away or something to that extent, and I guess the police athletic league cut ties with him.
How's he got so much damn energy? He put out a damn music video the other day.
He ain't playing ball no more. AB is a top flight athlete. Think about it. He ain't had to get hit in about damn near about 6-7 months.
He's every time I turn around, he's working out somewhere with some kids on the field working out. Yeah, he's making a video. He's making a rap video. That means he's got to spend some time rapping. Writing some lyrics. I'm assuming
Antonio Brown has always been known as a hard worker. He's got a high energy guy.
I'm a hard worker, but I have a hard time putting this damn show together by the time we kick it off. Much less, I don't know how in the hell he got so much time on his hands and stays his ass in trouble. Get some sleep, man.
Hey, man. What did he say? You sleep when you're dead.
Yeah, up. Good. He's up.
He's up, baby.
ain't no doubt about that. I'm like, God dang. Every time I turn around, there's a new video about AB doing something. Hey, look, I got a confession to make, though, Wade. I got to be completely honest with you, man.
Okay, what's up?
I'm through disrespecting Joe Burrow. I feel like I've disrespected Joe Burrow in the past. And not directly, I didn't do it purposefully. I didn't disrespect, but when I talk about Joe Burrow in the past, I've said, he's a great college quarterback. There's no debating that. He's a great college quarterback. But my question has always been, is he Kellen Moore, Colt McCoy type of guy, or is he one of these? Not necessarily in this. Is he Drew Brees? Is he Dak Prescott? Is he Sam Darnold? Is he I'm talking about like
deserve, is he an elite NFL quarterback?
Yeah, when you deserve like just like
or will he?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. I don't couch it as well. He can't be an elite quarterback because I think you can be limited from a skill set standpoint and still be an elite quarterback. And I guess that's where I'm going with it. I haven't necessarily. I've always thought he was limited from an arm strength standpoint, and I'm not sure that that's not the case. I'm not sure that I'm not going to end up being accurate on that particular topic, but I'm convinced after watching last night and watching several games up to this point that if he is a little bit underwhelming from an arm strength standpoint, I think the accuracy is as good as anybody I've seen out there. This dude throws the ball better than Tua.
Yeah.
This dude throws the ball better than Tua.
When you say throw it better, are you saying he throws it more accurately or does he throw it better? Like better arm strength, better zip on the ball, better spiral. Like when you say throws it better.
I think he throws it technically better and can do more with the football other than strength. I think Tua's got a stronger arm, but when it comes to anticipating, when it comes to accuracy,
throwing a guy open.
Oh my gosh! When it comes to timing,
yeah.
When it comes to throwing accuracy on the deep ball, and I think Tua is really good at all those things. But when I watch Tua, a lot of the times he's throwing to wide open receivers. And good look, I wish I had that luxury.
Yeah.
But when you watch Joe Burrow, now he got some guys on the other end of it that are going up and making catches, but he's dropping dimes, bro. This dude, if he does lack a little bit of arm strength, he don't lack arm talent. He doesn't lack accuracy. He doesn't the timing, the anticipation. This dude's special. Throwing the ball on the run, come on, man, and being accurate on the run. He made a couple of throws last night. You're just like, hey, man, there's nothing average about that.
Yeah, listen, the way that he's able to dissect defenses with his brain and with his arm,
yes,
is elite. He to me, by 2022, he's going to be the best quarterback in the AFC North.
One more time.
By 2022, that's
AFC North.
AFC North. That's Lamar Jackson. Ooh, that's Baker Mayfield.
Mouthful, Chief.
And then it won't be Ben Roethlisberger. It might be somebody. I don't know who the quarterback's going to be in Pittsburgh, but I think Ben will be done by then. But that, yeah, it's saying something because I think Lamar Jackson is still going to be in the upper echelon of quarterbacks right. in the NFL. But what I see out of Joe Burrow is a guy that uses his legs at a level that you don't expect. He's like Josh Allen and Drew Brees put into the same body.
Yeah. That's a good comp. Yeah.
He can run like Josh Allen, but he has accuracy and the ability to throw people open and throw the ball like Drew Brees. So if you're telling me you can give me a guy the same size as Josh Allen, but can throw like Drew Brees, that dude is going to be a perennial Pro Bowl, All-Pro type player. He's going
to
be elite.
I think Joe Burrow has it. I'm interested to see how big he really is. Like, you know, I think it's sometimes it's deceiving. You see, you know how it is. You see guys and you're like, man, like dude got narrow shoulders. Yeah, he's big, tall dude, got a big wingspan, but his shoulders are narrow, and it's a game changer. When you got big structure, ankles to neck essentially, you carry weight a little differently than most dudes do. And I'm anxious to see once they start picking and prodding at him, how he stacks up tangibly, physically, you know, weight, height, all that kind of stuff. But look, when you talk about accuracy from the pocket and on the move, it's elite. But at one point last night, Wade, I had to rewind the TV to make sure Herb Street, I didn't mishear him. Dude, he said he is completing 90% of his passes versus an 8-man zone defense. They're rushing 3 and dropping 8 dudes into zone, and he's completing 90% of his that's processing. That's ridiculous chemistry with your receivers. That is – I had a hard time completing 90% of balls on air.
Yeah.
Like with no defense on the field anywhere in practice, just completing 90% of balls.
That's a ridiculous number, man. 90%? Because then now if you're telling a defense, say, if we drop 8, this guy is still going to complete the ball 9 out of 10 times. All right, if we're going to bring pressure, think about what his percentage is going to be then. Because if it doesn't get home, now you have less guys out there to cover. And so, I mean, he's not going to have the weapons that he has in LSU when he first gets to the Bengals. Of course, he'll have A.J. Green. Hopefully, he'll be healthy, and he'll have Tyler Boyd. Both of those guys are legitimate receivers in the NFL that can make a bunch of plays, but they're not going to be at the level that much head and shoulders better than the cornerbacks they're going against like he has at LSU. But it's something about this kid, man. He's got it.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Hey, what are the odds, Wade? You just mentioned Wade Smith told us earlier that Joe Brady, the young wonder, offensive mind, genius from LSU that was there 1 year clearly, is headed to Carolina as the offensive coordinator for the Panthers under Matt Rhule, former Baylor coach. What are the odds that Carolina makes a push for that number one overall pick to draft him?
Man, Carolina, what are they picking, B-Mac? Somewhere like 10 or 11?
They're in the top 10.
So, to me, you got to trade up a bunch to get to that number one pick. Now, you think they're going to trade a Cam Newton and a bunch of draft picks?
Who's got the one, B-Mac?
The one? Cincinnati got that. That's why I say it's going to be B-Mac.
I believe the Redskins or the Giants.
Redskins, Giants, both got their quarterbacks, so it's all about the Bengals, right? I mean, so
it's the Bengals and the Dolphins fighting over who's going to end up with the number one pick. Are the Dolphins going to trade up, or are they just going to sit there and wait on Tua?
Yeah, man. You know, to me, that's one of those, I mean, both of those teams are in – I mean, they need more than a quarterback. I mean, you know what I mean? It just when you think about it out loud, it's like if you go – they need a lot of work. Like my point is if you could trade – like if you get the – whatever Carolina's number first round pick is, plus their third, that or second, whatever. I don't know what the value. I don't know what the trade needs to be. I don't know the draft well enough to know what the trade needs to be.
Yeah.
But my point is, Cincinnati. I've got to think they're in a situation where AJ Green's going to be out the door, right? You can go get draft picks for him, or is he a free agent? But nonetheless,
he has a long deal. That he's coming off an injury now. They might decide to part ways.
AJ Green's out the door.
You think so?
Yeah, man. I think he's tired of that. He's.
If they bring in a Joe Burrow, I don't think he's be out the door, man. I think he might want to sit there and play with the old Joe Burrow.
Well, you got to stick with me though on the like I want to see Joe Burrow go to Carolina.
I know you're trying to get him to
Joe
Carolina,
Brady.
But I'm
how nasty.
You know,
would that
I'm a realist, and so I'm just trying to figure out a way. How does Carolina move all the way up to get to
call
Joe
Bill
Burrow?
O'Brien? He'll tell you how to trade a couple draft picks. He'll get you a couple draft picks out there. How nasty would that be though if they somehow find a way to get.
If you put Brady with Carolina, you put him with Christian McCaffrey and whoever.
And Joe Burrow slinging that
Joe
peel?
Joe Burrow slinging that thing.
Come on,
and
man.
Whatever. I'm sure they would draft another receiver, but they got DJ Moore out there. They got some talent out there. They were able to move the ball with guys like Kyle Allen throwing the ball around. So you put Brady out there with Burrow, Matt Rhule, that's a great combination. I just don't see it happening. I think Burrow's going to have to make it happen with whoever's the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati, because that's where he's going.
Oh, stop it. Wait, damn, I hate that, man. I hate the Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals, man. It's like –
You think they're going to mess up Joe Burrow? Does that make you nervous that it's going to mess up his development as a quarterback?
Yeah, that's the armpit of the NFL, man. I mean, there's a handful of teams, and Cincinnati and Cleveland are two of them, that I just hate to see young – like the New York Jets, man. Like what's going on right now with Sam Darnold, that's a crying-ass shame, man. Sam Darnold is a bad dude. I mean, when you talk about – and I know we're living in a day and age where the hot thing right now is the dual-threat quarterbacks that can do and Sam Darnold's not that. And Sam Darnold is a throwback, but he's a bad man from the pocket, Coach.
Yeah.
He's got about four or five throws – From one game at USC. I don't remember which game it was, but I'm watching it. And that's when I became a believer. I was like, wow. I mean, it is a phone booth action. He's a good-sized dude that if he can stay out of the streets of New York and quit kissing on them chicks and not get that mono, if he can stay healthy, then he's got a chance to be really special. But he's up there with Adam Gase, and they're just messing the bed with him. And I just hate to see quarterbacks deal with that kind of thing, Wade, because I know how difficult it is to play any position with that kind of crap going on, much less to play the quarterback position.
Well, Clint, answer me this. How do you think he fits in the type of system that is run out there with the LA Rams? Because that's what they're doing in Cincinnati. That's the same, you know, it's the same philosophy that West Coast offense. How does Joe Burrow fit in one of those type of schemes? Because that's what he's going to end up in.
No, I mean, I think he fits. I think he fits the scheme. I think he'll fit any scheme, Wade. I mean, because when you talk about like this new age football that everybody's playing, you got your dual threat guys, and then you've got your McVay West Coast types of offenses, right? Andy Reid, McVay's. I mean, those aren't. But Pat Mahomes is obviously a badass because he's got his arm stupid, right? But it does. You don't have to have a Pat Mahomes arm to light the world on fire in one of those offenses, right? I mean, so I think from a fit standpoint, I think he fits them. He fits across the board. I don't think a fit is going to be a problem. He fits those styles of offenses really, really well.
He's going to have Joe Mixon at running back. He's going to have A.J. Green. Boy, they got some weapons. What's Tyler Eifert? They got some weapons out there, man.
I just can't. I look
offensively,
at
offensively, Cincinnati's going to be all right if they get Burrow.
Wait,
or
I look,
when they get Burrow.
I look at that them damn pinstripes. I mean, them Tiger stripes or whatever on the helmet. I'm just like, I just can't buy. I can't buy into it. I just can't have.
And he's from there. He's an Ohio kid, man.
I can't do it.
Joe Burrow.
I can't do it. Wait, look. We've talked it to death, man. These Astros, they done messed the bed. They dropped a hammer on them. Jim Crane's clearing shop over there, and he's got some work to do. Got to find a head. Got to find a manager. Got to find a manager. Got to find a GM. Texans again on both sides of the football. My biggest concern: offensive coordinator, defense coordinator. And I understand the offensive coordinator is a head coach and the GM as well. But it's got to change. There's no excuse to not change the offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans. I think the defense coordinator thing is going to work itself out. That leaves us here, Wade. The Rockets, baby. The Rockets. They're back on the floor tonight at Memphis. I mean, you know what word on the street is that if you're going to bet the Rockets, if you're going to bet the Rockets, you got to check the caliber of shake giants in the city when they're on the road. Well, they're on the road, and they happen to be at Memphis, that at one point in time was your old stomping grounds. And look, I ain't saying nothing. I don't know. I wasn't at Memphis with you. But I'm just curious to know.
You would have fit right in, though, I tell you that. You would have fit right in.
Hey, look here. I've been over on Beale a few times now. Little Rock wasn't too far from out there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just curious to know, man. What's some shake joints like in Memphis? Should I put my money on the Rockets tonight, or should I go on with the Grizz?
See, I tell you what, I'm going to be dating myself a little bit here, but the last shake I went to in Memphis, it was called Pure Passion. The Pure, as we would call it.
Pure Passion.
And I don't even know if it still exists, but that was the place where the who's who of the James Harden caliber guy would go to, that type of establishment. And it was a nice place, but mind you, when I was there, I was a broke college student. And so right. your experience when you go to the strip club when you're a broke college student as opposed to when you're an NFL player and you got you some yeah. wealth to yourself, it's a little bit of a different experience.
Wait, I'll tell you what it is. I'm in similar shoes. I mean, I don't think on the back end of it. I went in with a little bit of bread in my pocket. I ain't never been in there with the 12-year vet bread in my pocket. But
by the time I was a 12-year vet, I wasn't in there no more.
That's right. So let's make that loud and clear, Mama. Let's make that loud and clear. But nonetheless, the point is when you go in there and when you're a college student, you know, you're just kind of browsing around and you're checking out the environment. You kind of notice and recognize everything that's going on. When you go on in there with a little bit of bread, you ain't worried about nothing else going on around you.
Not at all. You're in your own world. I tell you what, the first time I went in there, I saw 3-6 Mafia in there. I saw DJ Paul and Juicy J. Now, mind you, I'm 18, 19 years old. You know, 3-6 right. Mafia was
I'm pissed,
was
by the way,
things
that you're
right
just now telling me this story in our relationship. Hey
man, I got
bro.
A lot of things going on in my brain, a lot of things that I forget, a lot of things. Right. You got to say the key word to jog a memory. Right. But like, oh, yeah, I remember that time when the first time I went to the pier, I saw those cats in there, and I was like, dang, they doing it big. And DJ Paul, if you guys don't know, he has a kind of a nub arm, on his arm, and so he was throwing money with one arm. And at the time, I didn't know he had it, and I was like, he just throwing with one arm. What? And then I actually saw it. I was like, oh wow, I didn't know that he had like the short arm. Right. But they was throwing some money in that club, and I was like, damn, that must be nice, man. And you talk about they were flocking to over there. Oh, there you go, it's money in here. Like you could see. It was a good time. So hopefully the pier is not there anymore because if it's there, James Harden's going to be there.
Hey.
And you might have some struggles tonight on the road for the Rockets.
Wait. I was when I was with the Cowboys, man, we it was a nice one called The Lodge. And we
Oh, I know about The Lodge. Mind you, I'm from Dallas. Like I know about that place.
Right.
I know about that place. That wasn't a place I frequented because I was a broke kid growing up in Dallas. So you didn't go to The Lodge if you didn't have any bread.
Well, I'm in there one evening. And it was, in all seriousness, a really cool spot relative. Food was phenomenal. The TVs were great. So it was a Monday night spot. Watch Monday night football kind of deal, right? If you want to believe that. But I walk in there one night, man, and I look across the fog and I'm like, damn, who is that big brother over there? That big old dude over there. And I look, and I hadn't played. I'd been removed from the Cowboys for probably 3 years, 4 years at this point. And I'm like, man, who is that? I mean, it's one of them dudes that was so big, you just don't see humans that size. And there'd been one dude that I'd seen and played, two actually that I'd seen and played with. And I was like, who is that? It was Flozell the Hotel Adams.
Hey, Flozell, that's a big dude.
Flozell had. They were perched on him like chicklets in a tree, like little chicklets in a tree, Chief. I thought, you got it like on his shoulder, one on his shoulder,
one
on the armrest. And I'm like, are you kidding me, Flo? I went over there and I said, Flo, what's up, man? And it was really cool exchange once I realized who it was. You know the other biggest human that I've ever seen in my life was?
Who was that?
Aaron Gibson.
Oh, yeah. That dude could dunk a basketball. But was like 360 pounds, dog.
Coach, he was on 360 after he did a South Beach diet or something. That dude was knocking on 400 all day, every day, Chief. And it was he had the biggest head that I'd ever seen. Loved the dude. Great dude. Walked into the lodge one night, and he's got him and his wife are sitting there eating a steak at the strip club.
If you can't enjoy a strip club with your wife, man, what's the point of being married?
Yeah, I guess if you're that big a fan, you better marry one that'll go eat a steak with you at a strip. But Aaron Gibson, a Wisconsin Badger, the NFL had to special order his helmet.
Yeah, he probably had the green dot since he was a little kid. And if you know what that means, the green dot is the helmet. When you play youth football, if you're a certain weight or you got to play offensive line, you can only play offensive line, so they put the green dot on your helmet. You know he was a green dot kid since he was a very, very young age. But, yeah, Aaron Gibson, I met him on my visit to Wisconsin coming out of high school, and he was about 360, 365 cool. back then. He got up to 400. That dude was huge. Probably he was the biggest person I've ever seen.
It ain't no doubt.
The biggest human being I've ever come across in my life.
Dude could drop to the splits.
Yeah,
in a like if you he could do it right now. He's one of those guys that's just super flexible. when he did it, it was painful to watch. But he would just drop down, and you're like, wait, what? How does that happen with a head that size? Look at the head on that there crawfish. I don't know how in the world he could make that happen. But anyway, so all this stemmed from the Rockets. The Rockets are they're in Memphis tonight, 7 p.m. Apparently, the Shake Giants are pretty good in Memphis, but we hope that a couple of them have closed down and James Harden stays in the hotel last night and earlier today. The Rockets, they're currently the fourth seed in the West. We're on to the Rockets, baby. We're on to the Rockets. We got to get knee deep into the hardwood and see what these Rockets can do. They're about midway through the season, I believe. They're 3-1 in January 2020. They're 3-1. They're 7-3 over their last 10 games. Not surprising. They're a very, very good basketball team. They beat Memphis 107-100 in their only other meeting this year. It happened on November the 4th. Russell Westbrook, no Brody tonight, man. No Brody tonight.
Load management.
He needs it. He's resting. He needs load management. Austin Rivers will start in his place. Clint Capella, he's back after missing one game. P.J. Tucker playing through a shoulder injury. Man, give P.J. a little damn rest. I mean, he's a guy that can get some rest, Wade.
Man, he's one of those guys that he probably wouldn't take the rest if they try to give it to him. He's one of them guys that's the glue guy, heart guy of the defense. He probably not – if he don't have to rest, he's not going to rest. It reminds me of just one of those throwback players that ain't trying to – they're trying to find a way in and not a way out.
Throw Tuck Dog a bone, baby. Give him a little rest. Got a bad shoulder. Harden, by the way, Harden became the 45th player in NBA history to reach 20,000 career points scored during their last game, which was a 139-109 victory over Minnesota. You realize that since James Harden became a Houston Rocket, he's averaging 29.6 points per game since he became a Rocket?
That's not hard to believe at all. The dude knows how to get buckets. There's nobody in the NBA that can guard him one-on-one. They're throwing double teams at him all the time, and he's figuring out a way to beat them. And he is the most exciting, not to say the most exciting, but he is the deadliest score of the basketball in the NBA right now. He can just fill it up night in and night out.
Hard to argue that. That is Wade Smith, former Houston Texan, 12-year NFL vet. I'm Clint Sterner. That's my man B-Mac behind the glass over there from Team 610, Sports Radio 610, the entire family. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.